everyone, and welcome to the second day of our conference, Garden Morality. I'm delighted to see you. And we'll begin our day with Dr. Salome Coughlin's work. She will present our first performance reading thing, I would say. I'm not sure exactly how to, but it's good that we cannot really refine it, I guess. Salome is an artist, writer, and a writer engaged in reading and listening as a social political practice of sound. The writings there a substantial way in shaping the field of sound studies and sound art. She's the author of Listening to Noise and Silence, Short Philosophy of Sound Art, published in 2010 by Continuum. The influential book has achieved national and international recognition, offering a phenomenological approach to sound art and studies. Her second book, Sound Possible Worlds, Here in the Continuum of Sound, was published by Bloomsbury in 2014, and it adapts and develops possible world theory in relation to sound to produce a meeting of the semantic and phenomenological and the place of listening. In 2015, together with Thomas Gardner, she entered Organized Sound, where she concentrated on memory material. Other recent writings include Sound Words and Sound Fiction, writing the affirmers soon to come in the Lucas family to sound the art. She had many artworks and participatory performances. She established the blog called Sound Words, which served template for the festival around sound art, sound reasons in Delhi, and Liquid Optical Festival in Melbourne in 2014. She also worked in collaborative performances on radio broadcasts and encourages a shared hearing and listening between sound and text. Booking sound art practice involves compositions produced by herself and in collaboration with David Wollin. She is very interestingly now developing a notion of uncurating, making accessible an experience of the invisible, the audible, and the yet inaudible. And we might hear more about these trajectories today. Obtained her PhD from Goldsmith College. And today she is the Sound Arts at London College of Communication. Her performance today is entitled Morality and of the Invisible Ethics of Being Audible.
Listening to the stars. Make new acquaintances. Listen to learn their methods of attaining success. 19th of November, 1952. Sagittarius. We have lived here for a while. Third floor, nice views of no garden. I always resented that no garden. And the stairs, particularly with the buggy and the children. They're older now, but still. Then came the mudslide, all of a sudden. I really do not know where from. But the long and short of it is that now we are on the ground floor. No more stairs, no more dragging or shopping, no more lugging of children and buggies, up and down three sets of steps. Just a nice ground floor entrance, and of course the garden is ours now. Sometimes you can hear the noises from down below. Screams and banging, smashing of furniture against the walls and ceilings, no doubt. We try to ignore it. I'm sure it will stop eventually. The mud is drying. We have sown some seeds. By summer, it should have become a nice green lawn to play on. Are you taking part?
Kolada Gatya. Stars are bottles of air rising through an infinite depth. We rise with them through this dark, slow motion snowfall in reverse. Sleep through our ascent, bound at wrist and ankle by the chains from silver, watch it. Anchors without weight. Even as we dream, we hold our breath against the moment when we crash up through the surface tension, as though through a sheet of glass into still another depth, with other stars. The fragments of our last collision in our wake, eyes shut tight, and every mouth a photo of a scream. Christian Burke. Morality of the invisible. Sound as material and as concept illuminates the unseen processes of the world and invites us to see things in a different light. Listening, we access the possibility of the world from the possibility of time and the possibility of space. Participating in the plurality of reality and challenging the singular actuality it is presented as. The invisible mobility of sound informs and incites this exploration and invites the listener to enter into slices of possibility to understand the heterogeneous construction of the real and participate in its reconstruction. To build a time-space world of its ephemeral possibilities and make it count within current notion of actuality. Listening, we experience the possible slices of this world, what might be and what else there is, behind and beyond the facade of a visual reality that trades in absolute uncertainties and produces the neoliberal interest of consensus and homogeneity, constructing a realism which, in Jacques Rancière's terms, is the absorption of all reality and all truth in the category of the only thing possible. This reality, as the only thing possible, is not a sonic possibility, which is part of and opens up towards all the variants of this world. Instead, it is a tautological possibility, as legitimacy of the absolute, where even those that have no part have lost the right to appear as not counted. Rancière explains the absolute possible reality of a current political age as a community that is reduced to the sum of its parts, where singular voices are made speechless in a consensual amalgamation, where they have lost the power to interrupt and the opportunity to be interrupted, and where the noise that might pluralize reality has been muted. This tautological reality does not arise from the engagement in the sensible, in the world as a possible life world, but from the ideology of its distribution as an undifferentiated flow that undifferentiates each of us in the mirror of its visual representation. And this visual representation is not immoral, but post-moral. Reality is an absolute possibility, needs no moral codes. It is morality as inscription in its image that prevents the inscription of anything else. By contrast, sound's truth and reality is plural and it is unseen. Its necessity is determined in darkness, not on the surface of the visible world, but in its depth. Its flow is not homogeneous and unidirectional, but ambiguous and unpredictable. It produces a fluid time-space environment, constantly revitalizing its context or even denying it, and beckoning us in to generate it for ourselves from its demand, unreliable formlessness and noisy shape. Thus it does not offer an absolute but demands participation, which disrupts the appearance of consensus and makes us see the rationale and objective of totality and challenges its tolerance. The morality of the sonic engagement is the morality of the invisible. It's not composed, collapsed into the totality of the image, and neither does it fulfill pre-existing normative codes, but responds to the demand of the dark, when we have lost our anchorage in visual things and rules and are forced to suspend our habits and values to listen in order to see the complex plurality of the real as simultaneous possibilities that include also impossibilities. That which has no part in a singular actuality, and it makes us consider the part we play ourselves.
Some crisis the two worlds approach. So you evaluate two ministers, convene, which is indicated at EU. Thursday on Italy, in Jew is Heperanopolis, Demetrius. Migration for commission, EU.
Sanyasale.
Emergency.
Exile.
Cabinet.
For grief he rode a colourful bell, a mark of joy. He bound his stories to his tongue's tip, so they would not betray him at the crucial moment. And he walked lightly in jewel-studded shoes, alone as the night, with no stars waiting by my eyes. Bird hovering over the horizon. Remember, bullets are everywhere. Remember me, the perpetual traveler. All my life I have willed to go forward and have not advanced beyond the borders of my grave.
Holds to leaders in you on cold Italy. In arriving migrants with working agents aid primary the one
whisper.
Children to save.
A whisper is a sibilant thing.
Square.
Sliding from the throat straight to the ear.
From city war.
An intimate thing I'd say to a sister.
Wounded,
a whisper star. Provides an access into boundless caverns.
Brothers
echoing myself,
like women and men they are.
A whisper breaks Narcissus' reflection of himself.
Raised to the learning after Sunday on Mass.
A whisper is echoes words.
His reiterated efforts.
This time, they are heard.
Why European greater, but advocate, outspoken, and Francis. Europe to trips more organized to migrants and smugglers encouraging was it that is amid year last lives 100,000
Father Alsaman, the lover of the blue writing above the sea, an
excerpt.
Who will lead me to the city that is a stranger to bombs, that I might live there? Who will lead me to feel strange to furtive burials of a murdered man tortured to death? Who will lead me to trees that have never heard a woman moaning for her hijacked lover? Who will lead me to a sky whose blue is a stranger to injustice and harshness, or a thought that has been raised? I'm tired of your love, your time, of men like you who compete in violence. Their love is blue writing above the sea. Who said, the love of men is not like blue writing through a sea?
Rescued. Be to wanted they set thrown in UNHCR for spokesman. Malanari.
Mara Madri. Untitled. The air stole from me from the sea. This is why you see my lips as sand, my work for grassy rocks. The air stole me from the sea. This is why you see my eyes as you fish, my looks silent. And though my pupils are not blue, my tears are salty.
They saw migrants
The sea called me to dream with it. So I went before the appointed time, for fear that its dream would begin without me. The dreams of the sea are wide and mysterious, and you are my dream, making it bluer and more mysterious. On the shore I left my shoes. In vain I wait, he will not come, an old fisherman in whose clothes a prince is hiding. I planted yesterday in the sea the evening one of my dreams, and in the morning the people found a small sailboat wrecked on the shore.
Europe has smuggled big migrants in the hovering net. Each crew could. Washing waters, livid. Outside, after feared.
Hala Muhammad, 58.
As men.
Love burned out the light with all my possessions.
The way.
I listen to it. It's my clothes, my closet. My window, my walks, until the darkness was burned.
After ministry, curia, about and so far, 28, the trees, coast guard, Italian ship, Mediterranean, 700 miles.
Aisha Arun, orbit.
Housing migrant into base, army.
Shapeless the waves rise towards their element where the foam of time swells within the cells. We will not need bridges. In the dream, the bridges move. Our own liquids augment the surface of streams moving into chaos. The cracked soul deserts the gleaming body. Absolute non logic. Proof of the indefinite. Categories of this belief, destroying fingerprints from the corners of accuracy, probabilities that grow mad. How can I and you conclude a maze of directions which are impossible to measure? Fabric of the moment, how can I appear in the silence of thunder? How can I exchange my trenches for speculations of radiance? I sip what remains of chaos. I close the texture of the heart, hiding its resemblance to the invisible. I hinder the crushing of time and the tread of distances. I seal off the gleam of mirrors and complete the face of my substitute. Someday, maybe I will overcome my certainty. The space is soon by, and time repositions itself.
French. The near train, another of routes. The long run. Migrants seeing described also passengers. Tweets. Equipment, safety, fire, damage. Train report, climbed, trying migrants because suspected was service.
What are you excluded from? The value of a fluid sound. The formless and invisible fluidity of a sonic possible world gives articulation to the transitory personhood and virtual materiality of neoliberal economics and politics while obstructing its flow. Sound's invisible mobility at once mirrors and thus reveals a fluid transnational economy and impedes its normativization. Sounding the possible slices of this world, what is and what else could be, it makes visible the unseen processes of capitalism's tautological reality. The destruction of the welfare state, its political, economical, and social responsibilities and identities, and the loss of its traditional morality, and stands as a fluid obstacle, interrupting through plural noise the homogeneity of its flow. For Etienne Balibar, the cornerstone of political activity is the tension of equilibrium. the pull between freedom and equality, which is a seat of conflict that enables and calls for participation, and which does represent the political as the possibility of politics. Where rupture happens and transformation can occur, where the excluded can find a voice and make themselves count, and where inclusion can become pluralized. Capitalist neoliberalism neutralizes this tension and renders the conflict insignificant, banal, in the light of an undifferentiated flow of things and people, but used to the purpose of economy, utility, and work. In its sphere, things, goods, people, borders, and identities become movable. However, they are not fluid in themselves. They have no power to transform and be transformative. They are not things singing as a conceptual and actual sonic thing that makes a sound of its own to be heard and contribute to the plural composition of actuality. Instead, they are reduced to the articulation of a harmonized flow to which they are not even an audible discord. Thus, they are not subjects with agency and self-determination, but identities defined by the measure of their utility. They're in the flow, but rigid themselves. Valiba calls this within the development of a new ethic of self-care, whereby individuals must moralize their own product by submitting themselves to the criteria of utility maximization, of productivity, of their individuality. The result is a negative individuality and a negative community, or what Valiba terms the dark face of ethics. The solidarity and social security are dismantled, and the subjects are disaffiliated from the community to live as entrepreneurs of their own circumstance. I understand this as a negative fluidity. Fluidity bound up in the dichotomy between fixed, coerced belonging and desperate flight. As such, it has no agency but represents a passive mobility. In response, the fluidity and predicative nature of sound, its transformative agency and imaginary potential can contribute to the critique of this entrepreneurial precarity and its concomitant internal and external exclusions. Investigating the capitalist flow through a sonic sensibility can grant us access to the coercive dynamic of its forced and homogeneous flow and entice us to interrupt the monochord of neoliberalism and make it sound as polyphony, to quote Valiba, composed of different system selves formed by crossing visible and invisible borders. What are you included in? Affluence. South Mid-Atlantic confidence. Different languages booming through a snowy valley. Spoken without the shame and hesitation of immigration, but with the certainty and rights of belonging in the global community of the moneyed. A new God for a possible world. Neither a sonic possible world nor the contemporary fluidity of personhood and materiality can rely on pre-existing moral principles, shared emotions, or a God. Commandments, rules, cultural codes, or a higher power do not attach to the invisible mobility of sound, and neither do they guide or safeguard the territories of belonging and identity in transnational capitalism. The tautological reality of neoliberalism eschews conventional ethics of solidarity and sociality. Balibar's phrase, the dark face of ethics, recognizes the disincorporation of the individual from the practice of the social contract, where notions of solidarity and security are negotiated by the conflict of different interests. In its place comes a humanitarian right, not based on positive identities and the negotiation of differences, but controlling and unifying the heterogeneous, the young unemployed, the migrant, women, gays, etc., into an odd multiple in which the uncounted are counted. But crucially, they cannot make themselves count, cannot make their voices heard, and are not allowed to participate and make that participation impact on the reality of the actual, which remains the tautological possibility of reality, whose God is the neoliberal flow, and whose ethics follows the moral code of efficiency and utility. In other words, the humanitarian rights of global capitalism outline the post-moral and post-ethical rights of an absolute possibility, which inscribes those rights into its image and prevents the inscription of anything else. Sound as a sonic possible world also challenges pre-given social values and relationships without, however, abandoning ethics of morality to the undifferentiated flow of a representational reality. Its plurality and invisible mobility impede a cultural, historical, and a representational sense of right and wrong, and rejects reality as the only thing possible. Instead, it reveals invisibly the multiple slices of this world and does not deform those in the image of a singular actuality, but generates their material differences as its real possibilities. In this plural and generative context, ethics cannot remain a matter of pre-given rules, and neither can it call for an absolute post-ethical inscription. Instead, some demands a contingent negotiation and participation in the construction of a concurrent ethics and the morality that it might articulate. And this construction, built in the darkness of the invisible without anchorage in visual things and rules, is not an outcome, but a process. A contingent negotiation of my differences and yours and the way we might live together because of them. In this way, the thing performs the tension between equality and liberty. We hear an agonistic game played out not on the boards of, not on the board of rules or the flow of neoliberalism, but on the ground. From within the unseen depth of anthropological of material differences, without ever overcoming their conflict. The listener's inhabiting subject who is counted not through status, category, utility, or negative identity, but through her participation in that game, in what she hears and what sound she makes herself.
Pour nous pousser à un peu de...
Who are you excluding? Aisuke Yanagisawa's sixth floor. Are you audible? Do you count?
Ethics of the inaudible. While the neoliberal disincorporation of social rights ignores the tension between equality and freedom on which political activity as the possibility of politics relies, sound makes this tension sensible and thinkable and invites into participation also those that have no part, not as sans part, but as a part of everyone at all. Is everyone at all to truly be everyone at all needs to include also the inaudible, that which for physiological and cultural, but also for ideological and social-political reasons, we cannot or do not want to hear. Thus, once we are attuned to the invisible and practice listening as the negotiation of mobile differences and unseen possibilities, we need to lend our ear to what has yet remained inaudible. Those that have no part, the erased and overheard voices, that cannot make themselves count in the constitution of a current actuality or its possibility. The inaudible is the possible impossible of this world. It is the social-political horizon beyond which we pretend not to see anything, even once we start to hear it rumble. The ethics of the inaudible is an ethics of practice, the practice of listening out for what sounds to what we do not want to hear, in order to grant it access to the sphere of influence. A sonic sensibility, as I have outlined it here, aims to create the condition of this access to the infrastructure of influence and participation. To legitimize through practice the right and the ability, as pouvoir and as savoir, to participate and be acknowledged as a participant. Thus an ethics of sound moralizes access to the infrastructure of participation, not, however, as an access granted to a particular identity, or inversely open to an undifferentiated universality, but as an access into the negotiation of difference. It promotes the demand to participate and gives the right to participate. And it generates the condition of the right to listen, the right to hear, and the right to be heard. In this sense, sound is a sensible that is not partitioned, divided up between people or used to divide people according to entitlement, inclusion and exclusion, but is diffused into every direction while reciprocally it makes sensible in my listening all the variants of this world. With a sonic sensibility, I want to propose the experience of a sonic possible, impossible world that does not pluralize into fragile and opposing factions, unified representationally through an absolute image of one possible reality, and divided politically through the propaganda of fear and the rhetoric of exclusion. But engender a sonic heterogeneity that promote the power of anyone at all. To disrupt and also be disrupted, which just refers politics as an activity and the condition of politics as the plural and practical occasion of the tension between equality and freedom. A tool for neoliberal control, as it so often is now, but that it becomes the practice of living in between equality and freedom, forever testing what is visible, what is invisible, and what is inaudible in that field of tension, so that any apparent homogeneity, any tautological reality, can be disrupted through the mobility of a fluid sound that stands as obstacle to the coercive a unifying flow of capitalism. Are you hearing the inaudible? That which cannot make itself count? Take as long to grow as a star at the edge of the universe may take to show its presence in the sky. A crystal manufactures itself tier by tier, each epitaxial layer is so thin that crystallization is akin to a pharaoh whose slaves build for him a pyramid by applying infinite coats of paint to the same surface. A crystal is a mineral blossom, never quick to germinate in pure solutions, since the flower needs a floor to form the substrate for its calyx. A crystal is the most exquisite parasite upon a spindrift seed. A white pearl goes slowly nova from a particle of black sand. A tulip dipped in liquid. Nitrogen undergoes instantaneous prionics, whereupon the flower can be smashed to bits as easily as a wine glass. A word, when read aloud, is such a crystal being shattered by a sequence of high-frequency vibration.
Whether you see how different they are.
I think talking about sound, there's always this danger that one is understood as essentializing a materiality. And I think sometimes in order to maybe think through the thought or do the provocation, that needs to be done temporarily. But it is in no way an essentialization really of sound and the visual, but more about our cultural participation in those two materialities, or how they sign up and how we assign within them. So it's not what we could see, but how we look at it and what we do see. I think that's a sort of a real basic, important point in all my writing and thinking about sound and the visual, that if I seem to be complaining about the visual and its absoluteness and its totalitarianness, I don't mean to see that the visual has to be that. I actually think, no, through listening we can see what else there is to see. That it's actually about seeing the possibilities of the world. So I'm critiquing a cultural attitude, not a physiological or an essence of looking. But in many ways, I do feel that the visual lends itself to becoming an absolute. I mean, that's why advertisement works so fantastically well. You know, it wouldn't work that well if you couldn't do a montage and all of a sudden, between a beautiful woman and the car, you want to go out and buy that car. You know, if it wasn't that total, advertisement wouldn't make as much money as it does. So I think there is the potential in the visual, if we don't look in a differentiated and sophisticated way, to pretend and to present as with a totality. And I think my call for an ethical listening attitude towards the invisible, the audible, but also the inaudible, tries to kind of disrupt this totality and make us look in more complex and different shaded ways on the world. So I think absolutely this is a multi-sensory, it's about the multi-sensory in many ways, and us as multi-sensory beings. And my access to open up this multi-sensoriality through sound, because I think its invisibility gives us really a good, it's a good strategy to relook and to re-see the world and to see things we might have overlooked or in a pragmatic sort of rush through the world we don't want to see. And so I think it's, for me it's like that. It's as a process, as a strategy, as a practice, and it really doesn't, I don't mean to set up dialectics or anything.
About your decision about putting sound in the work,
in the text. Yeah. But there are different elements. Most of the compositions, apart from Eisuke Yanagisawa's Sixth Floor, which was this kind of high-pitched recordings he does. Eisuke Yanagisawa is a Japanese sound artist who records with a back recorder, which is a recorder that shifts pitch so we can hear frequency we can't hear. So he goes really for the invisible, and even for the inaudible, because we can't hear that, we can't hear. So this is a recording of a building, the sixth floor of a building, and through his recording of it, we hear all the sounds of that building, and then there is obviously Julian Beck's passport clip. The rest of the recordings are my own work, but the work I do in collaboration with David Molin. So for example, the piece where I read the Syrian female poet poetry, is actually a performance piece we do together, or we do as a dispositif, so the recording, his voice is recorded, and I perform it, or other people perform the poetry, or other poetry on pop. But that's a bit more, you mean how I put it together?
No, I'm like, what is your aim?
In putting it together.
Affecting the text in
yes.
certain ways that can be questioned, you know, like you are sometimes imposing an emotion on the text that
yes.
you don't want to be.
I mean, I think I perform and I compose, and so I see when I give a talk that that's also a composition. I compose a talk. And I think even if you just quote people, and you stay with your very academic format and you quote different people or different artworks or literature pieces, you still do these montage, these juxtapositions, which manipulate. I think performance is, in presentation to a degree, of course you're manipulating to a degree, or at least you're trying to entice thought and open a space of thinking things together. But I think the reason I work this way, because this is actually the way I research, the way I sit on my living room floor, surrounded by my bookshelves and CDs, and I pull them out, and I So I see it very much as just the extension of composing in Pro Tools, it's composing on the floor, it's composing these texts. And there is an unpredictability, there's an ambiguity, and I cannot hear myself perform until I hear the recording, which is not the same as sitting in here and seeing myself perform. And I also, I don't think there needs to be disagreement. There can be discomfort too in the meeting points between works. And
I'm not sure if I'm able to formulate my question very well, but I would like to know a little bit more about the in all of all. You kind of defined it as that what cannot make itself work.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you are, with that definition, which is of course always including and excluding secta, if you are excluding another inaudibility.
Because you always are. So I think my aim, or what I would provoke artists, I think artists have to always work on that edge between the audible and the inaudible. And I think the artistic impulse is actually to make the inaudible audible, to create different audibilities and to proliferate what is audible. But of course, once you make something audible, there's another inaudible, and another inaudible, and it is endless. It's inexhaustible, as much as sound itself is inexhaustible. So it is a process, it's not a conclusion, it's not a solution, there is no consensus, there is no aim, oh, now we can all hear each other. It doesn't exist. It's impossible to achieve.
But can the inaudible be unethical?
Yes, I think so.
And actually I wanted to give two real examples coming from what you said. The first one, I'm not sure if you start by listening to the stars, but was that a recording of space, outer space?
No, this was the recording of my chimney piece, my chimney.
Oh, okay. Because, well, sometimes, well, you hear recordings of outer space, but of course it has to be translated, because otherwise we cannot hear it, so it's a matter of sonification, which isn't a matter of decision-making that you have to exclude. And make certain decisions which are, by the fact that you have to decide, are unethical, which you have to exclude other possibilities. The second example is about, you were talking about ads of cars and beautiful women. Many ads also have this, as we could have learned from Steve Goodman's Son of Orca, have this ultra frequencies. In all of those frequencies, which nevertheless manipulate our behavior to a certain extent. So, in that sense, I would say in all of those is also unethical or amoral or anti-moral stand.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I often discuss with Brandon because he's always so positive and optimistic, and his sort of sonic agency is very, to me, comes from a very benevolent place. Where actually I think, no, there isn't just benevolence at all. What we might uncover might be very dark, might be very difficult, might be very totalitarian itself. But for me it's about engaging in it in order to see it, in order to have access to it, and then be able to disrupt it, and to be able to work with it. And so I don't think sound is per se the goodie and visual the baddie. You know, I just think sound listening is a strategy to have a more complex, or there are various ways you can see the world, and I think in our current situation with ecological, political, social, economical disasters all over the place, we need as many perspectives and access points as we can to make sense of it and to be able to work with it. And so for me sound is one such portal, or gives you one such access to see the world a certain way and get clean some stuff, and I think there is, of course, a danger that the fluidity of sound and the fluidity of capitalism are very neatly fulfill each other, rather than one becoming an obstacle, you know, sound becoming an obstacle. So I think this is what I've tried to say in my last text was really about the fluidity, that one fluidity is the obstacle to another. So that means the kind of a will also on the part of the listener to engage in that way. Because I think it's very easy, as you say, in advertising, there's also a lot of music, elevator music, seductive music, and apply more to be absolutely in that swarm of purchase. But I think I'm talking about a counter flow, if you will, or a diffuse flow that's not just getting us to the cash till or getting us to utility, but yeah, hopefully it comes up a greater diffuse complexity. So I know I think there's malevolence there as well.
Thank you very much. Very, very moving and interesting. And I want to ask about your last point, sound as obstacle. On the one hand, we're wanting to use sound, right, to listen more, to have more sound included, even though they are inaudible.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you want sound as an obstacle. So what is it an obstacle of, for example?
I don't mean I want it as an obstacle, although as an artist you can work with it as an obstacle, but more that listening, we can hear, if we train ourselves to listen, or if we generate a sort of a sonic sensibility, because things are enormously visually literate. Culture. You know, we're really good at reading the world visually in a certain way. But to kind of maybe generate and promote a sonic sensibility where we can understand the flow of sound and its mobility and its dark mobility, its invisible mobility, but not just see it as something that supports the capitalist neoliberal flow, but that actually interacted and interrupted and disrupted. That's what I mean by being an obstacle. That you don't just hear it as promoting the same path, the same sort of, but making it complex, complexifying what that is. Yeah.
While you were reading different excerpts and playing the male voice reading the narrative, I was hoping that I could finally achieved that third ear that Theodore Wright talks about in Whistling with the Third Ear, because I was unable to hear both what you were reading and what the male voice was saying with equal attentiveness. So I'm wondering whether you are asking us to aspire to be able to hear simultaneous narratives with equal attention.
I think what's difficult is here is that I have a speaker here. I find it hard to gauge, and obviously when it's done performatively, it's an improvisation where we see and hear each other. So I think it's if I do the poetry, I can hear the speaker more clearly. So I think that's part of it. Also, of course, what he read or what he said was not read backwards in the way we heard yesterday, but it was newspaper articles on the Syrian crisis, or not on the crisis itself, but on the crisis within the Mediterranean, so the what happens in the sea between Africa and Europe, those newspaper reports, so that the factual, judicial face and representation of that crisis was read backwards, word by word backwards rather than words backwards, if you know what I mean. So they were real words, but they were read backwards, but they still had the framework and the infrastructure of the newspaper reality. So I think it will be very difficult anyway to hear, so you get snippets like crisis, Syria, migrants, you get bits, and you're never meant to get the real newspaper flow of which is, I think it's also totalizing what you read in a newspaper can be very, because no newspaper nowadays is any more independent.
Let's make the question a little simpler then. You also had times when you were reading to different musical or sound compositions. In that case, should we still aspire to be able to hear both with equal attention, or should we always have something in the background?
I think maybe somewhere it's also about opening up a space between, that you maybe end up hearing neither really word for word, but you get to maybe, could say, Nancy sonorous, just the sonorous of the performance, of the performing body, and you know it's a voice, and something else is a material composition, and that the semantics doesn't become that important anymore, but maybe the tension between, the space that's opened up between. So I think the performance of the audience to how they listen to and perform the work is obviously quite open and not controllable. But I hope it opens up another space of interpretation.
But if it's opening up a space in between, then in fact you are also creating simultaneously two inaudibilities.
I don't think they're inaudible because they're the bits that are between, you know, they're the bits that create that. They're not inaudible. If I switch them off, that space is made. But they have their position on the tension. That is, they're sitting on the tension and looking at each other. But if they are absolutely audible, you might be listening to them distractedly, but that doesn't make them inaudible. I don't think.
Last question?
Yeah,
it's building on a little bit what Marcel was bringing up there. I was very interested in you talking about, again, inaudible for various reasons, whether it's the psychological, the physiological, erased, overheard, underheard voices. And so something that's come up for me here at this conference is the usage of stories or cultural artifacts or cultural productions of things that we do not own. And here we are in this kind of privileged position to forward these, whether they're stories or cultural production. So your comment about the artist working between the edge of the audible and the inaudible and our kind of responsibility around that, I'm just curious to know, I guess your thoughts on that further. Like, what is our responsibility in that area?
Well, I think it's that kind of ethical responsibility of being together in the world. I think with being together in the world comes this ethical responsibility of being engaged with each other, whether that be negative or positive, you know, as a conflict, as an acknowledged, I am, you know, the intersubjectivity of our being. And so I think as an artist, I think, whether we think about it or not, of course artists are pushing on visually and sonically and in other media what we're able to perceive in the world, because they, you know, that's why art is often difficult and then gets assimilated and then another artist is, but it's actually the quite basic idea of art as a disruptor, as a disruptor of comfort, habit and aesthetics. And I am very keen on that people should be educated and made to listen and look. And I'm very dismayed at the fact that, at least in England, music education stops about 1930, 1940, you know, in terms of what we're listening to. And so, of course, we're not listening with the contemporary ear at all. So we can't hear the inaudible, because it's sort of hidden a bit, that's sort of about it. And then, you know, if you're really lucky, you do a bit of serialism, but you probably do that by looking at a score rather than actually hearing it. And that means that if we leave out all this contemporary work for the last 70 years, how, because that is composed in relation to a contemporary soundscape and a contemporary being and a contemporary politics and activity of being. And so I think we're really missing contemporary ears. Visually probably too. I think visual arts education goes a little bit further in schools. I mean, I'm talking schools, not universities here. Probably about 60s, 70s still. But then it stops as well. And I think that is I would love all children to have to listen to, you know, contemporary tango and really be exposed to it and think about it and find the vocabulary to talk about it. And so I think, yes, I think it's a responsibility and then the danger of sounding terribly communist. You know, I'd like state schools that all teach the same and that make children listen.
Just a quick comment. I really like I like the way that we were listening and the interstices. I thought that was beautiful. And I like the embodiment.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
So we begin our session in 5 minutes. So it's a short break.
Can I help you? Oh yes, if you could just sort of put it on top of each other.
Turn it up. Thank you.